The Golden Era Committee is really to look at those players who were part of the generation that integrated baseball, starting with Jackie Robinson. So that's the front marker, 1947, ending at the era of expansion in 1972-73. It's a newly constituted form of the Veterans Committee where they split it up into three. The Golden Era Committee, there's the Expansion Era Committee, and then there's also the Pre-War Committee. And so they're trying to really consider the cases of these ballplayers who might have been overlooked by previous versions of voting for the Hall of Fame. And in particular, what we see with the Golden Eras Committee is a number of players like Minoso and Tony Oliva and Louis Tiant, some of the Latino greats of this era that one could say were overlooked because they're a part of the really first significant wave of Latin American players to make it into major leagues. And Minnie Minoso being the very first black Latino to traverse that racial divide into the major leagues. And much of his case is not just as a barrier breaker, but from that period of 1951 to 1961, his first 10 years in the major leagues, there was only one outfielder in the major leagues that outperformed him, Mickey Mantle.
Who is on the committee? Is it your usual lot of writers and people along those lines?
This committee, again, is very different. It's a mixture of ball players who are in the Hall of Fame, such as Hank Aaron, Ralph Kiner, and then also you have broadcasters who have covered the game, and then there are also executives. And what they've done is the previous version of the Veterans Committee, which did not elect anyone in for 8 years, was all the living Hall of Famers. And I'll quote Faye Vincent, who said, "Not even St. Francis of Assisi would have gotten in. You know, you have to have that 75% threshold." And, you know, he's a patron saint of animals. And you know, there might be, you know, 25 members of the Hall of Fame who don't like animals who won't vote for him. So this is an era, a new committee, a new setup. And the purpose is to elect people. That's what veterans committees are for, to consider the past and to have people enshrined who have been overlooked.
Well, and the other name we have to bring up here is Ron Santo, who expressed so much frustration when the Veterans Committee wouldn't vote him in and maybe some other names. And I wonder if this is a new way of looking at things from the league and maybe realizing that the makeup of the Veterans Committee or the way they considered the votes wouldn't get anybody voted in.
And that's definitely true. The Hall of Fame rethought the process. And they do have a president who came in, Jeff Idelson, 2 years ago into the position, and they had many conversations, and this is what they thought would remedy this problem. Ron Santo's case is, again, very well known. He was among the very best. He and Ken Boyer were the very best third basemen of their era, and also third basemen are arguably the least represented in the entire Hall of Fame, and in terms of Mike Schmidt, Brooks Robinson, and George Kell, and a couple other guys, you know, there's not too many of them. And Santo, you know, it's sad because it was because the Veterans Committee was not working that, in fact, Santo didn't get in. He and Gil Hodges were two of the individuals who received the highest number or percentage of votes. And yet we also have his passing last year. And you know, and going to a number of the events where the White Sox are trying to educate the sporting public and those 16 members of the Golden Eras Committee, you know, a number of these individuals, Louis Tiant was there, Tony Perez, and Minnie Minoso, and they were like, you know, it's sad to get recognized after you're gone.
Well, we know that Minnie Minoso was the first black Latino in baseball and the first black player in Chicago. What are the biggest things that a lot of people are missing about his career?
We had a number of statisticians with the new sabermetrics look at Minoso in his prime in the major leagues. And they were stunned because Minoso, when you do the new sabermetric analysis of his baseball statistics, he comes out a lot better than what people remember. With the new sabermetric models of wins above replacements and all these fancy math that I don't know, he came out second to Mickey Mantle for that period. And in fact, Bill James, if we go back to 2000 when he published his abstract on baseball, out of the top 15 outfields of all time, Minoso ranked ninth. All eight in front of him are in the Hall of Fame, and three of people behind him are in the Hall of Fame as well. So he and one or two other guys are the only ones not in. And in my case, as my research has always focused on, is we have to consider, on top of those statistics, is the social importance of being a pioneering player, part of that group of players who helped transform baseball from a segregated institution into an integrated institution, and how much more difficult it is to achieve those numbers and that greatness on the field while also taking on this other pioneering role.
I want to ask you, what was the earliest age you became aware of Manny Minoso and his achievements?
You know, it's interesting because Minoso's name within the circles of those who follow Latino baseball is revered. And in fact, Tony Perez at this White Sox forum that was organized to talk about Minoso and his Hall of Fame candidacy, Tony Perez noted that even among the Latino players like Perez, Marichal, and Cepeda, guys who are in the Hall of Fame, when Minoso enters in the room, they stand up in respect and reverence for what he did. And, you know, it's kind of awe-inspiring to think of the Hall of Famers deferring, you know, the place of prominence to Minoso because of what he did. The uncles and the older members of the Latino community I grew around who were baseball fans, Minoso was that name. He was the one who set the initial gold standard that other players would have to eclipse. And, you know, honoring that history and his achievements on the field itself is part of what I think the Baseball Hall of Fame is for.
Anything else you want to add, you know, on the list of players?
Well, again, one of the interesting figures on the ballot is Louis Tiant, and partly because his story also captures the arc of Latino players going from exclusion to inclusion. His father played for the New York Cubans in the Negro Leagues and was an ace pitcher. In 1947, at the age, I believe, of 42, he went and enjoyed a 10-0 season for the New York Cubans, and they won the Negro League World Series. But it also happened that right across town there was Jackie Robinson breaking the color line with the Dodgers, who would also be propelled into a World Series of their own. So father played in the Negro Leagues, and son got the opportunity to play in the major leagues and achieved greatly. One of the fascinating things about Louis Tiant is that he went through a year where he actually broke his shoulder in the middle of the year. And so he missed really about a season and a half. He was with the Minnesota Twins, I believe, at that point in time. And the Boston Red Sox were the ones who took a flyer on him as he was recovering. And he achieved greatness twice in his career. And to me, again, it's an incredible arc of a story to go from the son of someone who was denied the opportunity to play in the major leagues to make it yourself in the major leagues. Meanwhile, Castro's revolution had taken place in Cuba. He couldn't go back to Cuba. So in my first book, I mentioned him and other players who were men without a country. They couldn't go back to Cuba. The United States had to become their country. And in the middle of that career, he breaks his shoulder after delivering a pitch. And he was out of commission, and he comes back, and he has some of the most fabulous years with the Boston Red Sox. And I say this as a Yankee fan, to acknowledge that he truly did something amazing with that team. The 1975 World Series was a showcase of the gut, determination, the guile of that pitcher. And, you know, he won 229 games in his major league career, and, you know, he lost a lot of time to injury, but he also achieved greatness in those. He won 20 games four times, and he was an incredible figure in the story of baseball. And I think he definitely represents an important part of the history of the game and achieved greatness on the field.
Has Minoso been able to make any much of his own case? I know he's in his 80s, but still lives in the Chicago area.
Well, you know, I think Minoso has been committed to allowing others to speak for him. You know, his Hall of Fame candidacy as a whole is really interesting because there's a couple of rules that were in place that made sure that Minoso was not on the ballot till 1985. And one of them was if you played in a league that was affiliated with organized baseball, such as the Mexican League, you were not put on the Hall of Fame ballot. And so after Manny's last major league full season was in 63, then he went on to start playing in 64 in Mexico and would play to 1971 in Mexico and actually played very well. And he was also a manager there. So he should have been on the first ballot for the first time in 76. But then he had the pinch hitting appearances. And then that meant 1981. But then in 1980, he also played again in a couple of games with the White Sox, which meant he waited till 1985. The point of this is that 22 years after his last real major league action was the first time he appeared on a ballot for the Baseball Hall of Fame enshrinement. And a lot of the sports writers, members of the Baseball Writers Association of America, who actually had seen him in his prime, were either no longer participating in the votes, had died, had passed on, you know, guys like Shirley Povich and others. And so Mendoza was never voted on by those who truly saw him at his prime. Most of the people who did vote on his case were those who remembered him for the Bill Veeck curiosity tour, I'll call it. The appearances as a pinch hitter, so you can, you know, make the claim that he played in five different decades. So Mendoza didn't get considered because of that. The Hall of Fame actually, and Baseball Writers Association in terms of Hall of Fame criteria, actually did away with that rule about 10 years ago. But that actually hurt his case. The other part of the story is that the Baseball Hall of Fame, for enshrinement in the Hall, you either enter as a player or as an executive or umpire, and you enter as a Negro Leaguer or a Major Leaguer. And the case of Mendoza is where he was actually one of those transformative figures who transitioned us from the era of segregation to integration. His 3 years in the Negro Leagues are not counted at all in how we assess the importance and the greatness of his career, and nor is the slow pace of integration. When the Chicago White Sox traded for Mendoza in 1951, he went from being someone who sat on the bench for the Cleveland Indians, as well as a star in the Pacific Coast League when he was sent down, to an all-star. He was an all-star in 1951. And, you know, what I've noted in numerous interviews is he didn't get that much better over time. What he had was truly a shot. Mendoza had the fabulous misfortune of being sold from the New York Cubans following the 1948 seasons to the Cleveland Indians. Why misfortune? Because the Cleveland Indians were the most active team in the entirety of the American League to acquire Black and Latino talent, the talent that had once been excluded. That's why they got Larry Doby, Luke Easter, Harry Suitcase Simpson, the Hall of Famer, Satchel Paige. They got Mendoza. They later would have the second baseman from Mexico, Beto Avila, and others. And, you know, they really stockpiled that talent. And you can look on the World Series team that 1954, and you'll see that Black and Latino talent, the Mike Garcias and Avilas and others who were playing on that team. And that was the organization Mendoza had been traded from to play with the White Sox. And as I noted before, that decade that he had, he first year in the Major League, he was 28 years old when he really had a shot to play full time. And he had been playing professionally in the United States 8 years already before he had his first true chance. And Mendoza gets penalized for that because American League owners were so slow to integrate. The National League was much quicker. And for me as a historian, you know, I often say, you know, let's put aside the statistics and let's not reward the reality of segregation. Like, allow the segregationists to enjoy the benefit of the doubt because they're the ones who slowly incorporate these Latinos. Mendoza shouldn't get penalized for that. You know, in fact, we should consider, and Jackie Robinson himself, in the piece I wrote this for the Chicago White Sox, they published on MLB.com, that Mendoza's role as a pioneer ought not to be overlooked. And this is exactly what Jackie Robinson said in the winter of 1962 when he was going to be on the ballot for the first time. You know, given what has transpired in U.S. society and in baseball, the role as a pioneer need not be overlooked. And Mendoza was the first player as a Black Latino who in major leagues who truly had to deal with that doubleness. Clemente said basically to Roger Kahn, I was a double N-word. Because I was Puerto Rican and because I was Black. And Cepeda himself often said it, you know, we always had two strikes on us. And others in the classes I teach here at the U of I about Caribbean Latino migrations, you know, the very interesting position of Black Latinos, that oftentimes there were too Black to be fully accepted as Latino and too Latino to be fully accepted among African Americans in the U.S. And that's where Mendoza had to abide. And then consider his character. Yeah, you know, he was someone who truly helped Chicago during this period of racial tumult. Alan Diamond Mendoza is getting everyone to cheer for him. And at airport homes, at Trumbull Park, and in Cicero, throughout Chicago during this period, there's racial violence against integration, against housing integration. And yet Mendoza was a figure who brought people together in the midst of all that, and who doesn't hold bitterness toward the role he had to play in history.